Enter with me into this special place. Bring with you what is yours.
A burdened heart, a joyous song, a wearied spirit, a seeking mind. Bring the gift of yourself to the altar. It is an honorable gift. Let these be our words for meditation and prayer. We summon ourselves from the demands and delights of the daily round, from the dirty dishes and unwaxed floors, from unmowed grass and untrimmed bushes, from all incompleteness and not yet startednesses, from the unholy and the unresolved. We summon ourselves to attend to our vision of peace and justice, of delight and devotion, of the lovely and the good, of who we are and what we can do. We summon the power of tradition and the exhilaration of newness, the wisdom of the ages, and the knowing of the very young. We summon beauty, eloquence, poetry, and music to be the bearers of our dreams. We would open our eyes, our ears, our minds, our hearts to the amplest dimensions of life. We rejoice in our own promise and possibility. Let us follow the tone into the silence.
So, last Sunday, when we were all singing Amazing Grace, and we got to that bizarre moment in the first verse where our Unitarian Universalist hymn book slaps down an asterisk and a choice, what did you do? Which did you choose to sing? Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me, or that saved a soul like me. Probably depends on how you were feeling that day. Exactly how transformed you were one way or the other. How particularly wretchful or soulful. I know of no other hymnal in print that virtually stops the singing in mid-measure to poll the congregation, to call for a theological debate within the mind and heart of every singer. And right there, quickly, because the pianist isn't going to wait for you, the congregation isn't going to wait for you, Sunday rolling its way to Monday isn't going to wait for you, you have to stake your claim. You have to make your mark. You have to testify, all the while wondering if the person singing next to you will take offense if you confess at the top of your voice your own wretchedness or even our common condition as a fallen, faulty species. Or will your neighbor be annoyed or maybe shocked if you stand there warbling on about what a pleasant soul you are, what a nice, well-rounded, fully individuated, sin-free, guilt-free humanist soul? There you stand, frozen in time, and the music plays on while you hastily cobble a theology. We sing our songs in different keys and cadences. We are on our own to make a faith out of nothing, which is to say, out of everything we have. This is daunting, lonely work, demanding and relentless work, the work of a lifetime, Not everyone wants to stop singing in the middle of the song and consider once again and all alone the nature of the human soul and God, infinity within and infinity without. It's a lot to ask of people on a Sunday morning. It is my very fine pleasure to be here with you this morning, here in the college town of Austin, Texas. I have come from a college town myself over there in Oxford, Mississippi, to this college town here in Texas, home of the University of Texas. And this is all just fine with me, because I fell in love with college towns over 40 years ago, I hate to tell you, back in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And I was amused to note that someone sent me this, that in the recent issue of Travel and Leisure, both your college town here and Chapel Hill and Oxford, Mississippi make the top 10 college towns in the country. Hooray for us! College towns, as your good interim minister noted over dinner two nights ago, are places where the life of the mind is a central part of the life of the community. They are places that seem to suit particularly well folks who are Unitarian Universalist. Indeed, during at least one phase of our Unitarian growth initiatives, college towns were targeted for new congregations out of the belief that in towns like these, folks likely to come to UU congregations would be found. Now, Austin has probably stretched beyond the strict definition of a town. Indeed, riding around these days, I find it's a pretty big city. But Oxford, back in Mississippi, still looks and feels like a small town. And delightfully for my taste, it is the kind of place where community is almost palpable. You can just about feel it. I love this about Oxford. And I like to say that Oxford is a place where you can still touch and walk around in the heart of the community, around that courthouse square. And in fact, you can find the hearth of the community. In this latter sense, I am talking about Oxford's wonderful homegrown and home-owned bookstore, Square Books, right there on the square. Somebody knows about that. It's our hearth. It's the place where we gather to tell each other stories and to listen to stories from writers and authors who come through. And it's this same bookstore that is the place that gave birth to what is now an Oxford institution, the Thacker Mountain Radio Show. The heart of our community is artfully embodied right at the heart of every time Thacker Mountain Radio happens. But allow me to hold off explaining how all this relates this morning until I've talked about a few more things, because this notion of community and how important it is and how things like transition and transformation are players in what it's all about, that's really what I want to talk about this morning. Churches, I was once told by a wise and seasoned interim UU minister, are in the transformation business. He was talking to me as we drove down the interstate between Atlanta and Montgomery. I mused on this a while, and then I realized how profoundly I agreed with him. The most recent UU PR tagline, printed on bumper stickers and on banners, invites folks to come to our faith tradition to do these things: nurture your spirit, help heal our world. I mused on that a while, too, and then realized how much I agreed with that. The line speaks about what we're about, what our purpose and mission are. We are about nurturing or transforming our own selves with all the struggle and accountability that that is about. And we are about healing and transforming our world. Yep, We're in the transformation business. Now, other folks, other church folks, are also in the transformation business, like the Methodists and the Mormons and the folks at the local mosque, folks who are part of any other religious family. And that's why my wise minister friend was saying, we're all in the business of transforming ourselves in this religious business and others and our world. And that's how it should be. But of course, Unitarian Universalists are about transformation that arises out of our particular set of values. Those you can find set down in our principal purposes and talked about as we name the sources of our inspiration, wisdom, and knowledge. We UUs gather together in communities we call congregations, and our congregations are linked together by a philosophy we call congregational polity, which is grounded in independence, but also in interdependence, but that is another sermon. Yes, again, we are in the transformation business. And so here we are, living out our work of transforming ourselves and the world, and then change happens, like it does, like it always does. When change comes along, we find ourselves trying to navigate down some paths and through some doors and across some thresholds that are not like what we were used to. The place we find ourselves when change happens is a place that can be called a transition place, an in-between place, a liminal place. A place that happens after what we were used to, but before a new pattern sets in and becomes a new normal. This transition place, however, is a place fraught with opportunity and possibility. When I set down my goals each year as Mid-South District Executive, and I always set down goals, tell my board of trustees what I think I ought to be doing this year, I always note that I will be giving particular attention to those congregations who are in transition. I do this with great intention because I know that the congregations who find themselves in a transition place are in a place where they have new opportunities. Places where they can get unstuck from some places where they might have been stuck before. Where they can be open to new possibilities and new directions. It's really an exciting place to be. You know what kind of place this is. It's a once in a rare time spot where things that have been change are no longer there and new opportunities open up. And you, First UU Church of Austin, are in just such a place. But remember that it is a place fraught with opportunity and new possibilities. It's a lot to ask of people on a Sunday morning or any other time, but it's the stuff that needs grappling with. Now, a transition place is a liminal place, as I said before. I love this word, liminal. This is a word and a concept that the dictionary tells us is about relating to a threshold. A liminal time is one which occurs between things, between times, between eras sometimes. The etymology of the word is from the Latin word limen, which means a threshold. Psychologists called liminal space a place where boundaries dissolve a little and we stand there on the threshold getting ourselves ready to move across the limits of what we were into what we are to be. One Catholic writing about liminal space notes that this is a place where we are out of place. And it says, Not being in control is the unique character of liminal space, and the only way God can take control of your life. Paying attention to liminal moments is wisdom for a lot of times in our lives, even those little times, like when you're leaving one place to move to another, when you're leaving someone you won't see again for a long time, or like, real specifically, this happens to me a lot, when the rental car folks remind you to check for your belongings in the car that you're leaving because you won't be returning to it. That's a liminal moment, folks. And it is well to be aware of and pay attention to those moments. But liminal moments can truly be fraught with opportunity if you can see them in that light, because they can open up a clean slate, a new chapter, a time that you can reinvent yourselves, a time when you can redefine. Malcolm Gladwell hasn't written about this exactly yet. He of the books like Tipping Point and Blink, although Blink gets close to this, but he may well do it sometime. My point in pointing this out is to charge you with taking full advantage of this rare time. Pause to realize that you have an opportunity to do things differently. Maybe to sweep up some old dusty places. Maybe to rearrange some patterns that may no longer serve you well. Maybe. And imagine the possibilities of doing things you may have hoped to do before, but couldn't because the system that is your congregation and its stuff was just too set in its ways. Interim times are transition and liminal times, and they are fraught with opportunity and possibility. I have a couple of stories to share with you out of my years of watching congregations go through these times, and these two I particularly love. The first one is only a year-old story. It happened last year. A congregation of about 110 folks lived in a sweet but small and old little yellow church in what had once been the country outside Atlanta, but which was now the suburbs. In this sweet church, where the seating was 100-year-old pews, they were maxed out at the number of folks they could seat. Even with two services, their membership growth had plateaued. Yet there they sat. Until their minister of some years retired, and a lively interim minister arrived, and she looked around and looked at the statistics and looked at those pews and said to the congregation leaders, "Surely it is more important to be reaching out to more people than keeping these old pews. What do you say?" She did this within the first month she was there. I thought it was bold and courageous. Well, these folks had just been challenged to see the particular liminal and threshold opportunities that their interim time could bring. Two of the men in the congregation took up the minister's challenge and offered to lead a Move the Pews weekend during which the old pews would be removed and stored just to keep open the possibility that they could be returned, kept everybody happy, and flexible stacking chairs would be brought in. And so it came to pass in the little old yellow church that in the course of one weekend in October of 2008, the sanctuary grew to be able to seat 25 more people. In the midst of transition, transformation happened. And here's another story. Several longer years ago, I watched the largest church in my district, the UU Congregation of Atlanta, move through a transition time. Now, this congregation of over 700 folks, really 1,000 when they count all ages and all friends that they minister to, this congregation had been going along in a pretty regular pattern for many years. And then their minister of over 17 years retired. And they called in an interim minister. This turned out to be a fairly direct and demanding interim minister who challenged them to rethink and reconsider and reevaluate a lot of things, which in fact pushed them into some conflict, which tested their commitments to each other and their congregation. And the conflict got out of control right there during the second year of interim ministry. People were posting emotional messages over email. You know, the kind of thing that can happen so easily when it's just so easy to vent your own emotional response to something and push send with a great sense of power and influence. One week there was a petition circulating to call for the interim minister's dismissal. Another week there was a different effort to make amends for perceived injustices to some staff members. The very good lay leaders of this congregation managed the conflict, extremely difficult though that was to do, and kept the congregation from imploding. In fact, the congregation was able to stay on track and call its next settled minister at the end of that year. But the lessons of the conflicts were not lost on that congregation and the leaders. And so as their new minister arrived, they began work on a covenant of healthy relations that would involve the whole congregation. A special task force was established. Listening meetings were held through the course of a year. And within that year, the congregation members, at the end of that year, the congregation members approved a full covenant of healthy relations. It said things like this: we will be mindful of how we communicate with and about others. We intend to listen actively and to seek to understand the perspectives and opinions of others. Be respectful and kind in our words, tone, and body language. Use email and other forms of electronic communication with respect, kindness, and care. And furthermore, it said, we will seek a peaceful and constructive resolution process when conflicts arise. We intend to communicate directly with the person or group involved instead of gossiping or speaking negatively in the wider community. Assume that others act with goodwill and intentions. Be forgiving and loving when we or others make mistakes. Apologize when warranted and seek to make amends. This congregation, where only a few years before there would have been a huge resistance to something that sounded as restricting and unnecessary as a covenant, made a giant step. And where they've landed is in a place that feels both safer and more harmonious and loving and caring to them. A place where stronger community and more diverse community, full of rich possibility, can grow and flourish. And indeed it has. In the last few years, they've added yet another 150 members. The folks in this congregation opened themselves to the learning opportunities of their transition time, and transformation happened. They now point proudly to that covenant and display it on their website and pay attention to practicing what it says. Having this covenant in place has anchored them and its values in a place of common understanding and commonly agreed upon respectful manners and care. Agreeing to have this covenant and now making the acceptance of it and the practice of it part of the congregation's culture has deepened and enriched the spiritual community at the heart of their congregation. Meanwhile, back in Oxford, the Thacker Mountain Radio Show happens every Thursday afternoon around 6 o'clock, as soon as folks have had time to get off from work and get to the square. It has local musicians and visiting musicians, and a master of ceremonies who has a mouthful of the South. And it has writers and storytellers who read stories. And it goes on for about an hour, and is broadcast live on the local university channel and carried the next Saturday night on the state NPR station. Now, just in case you were wondering, Thacker Mountain is the name of a small kudzu-covered knoll right outside Oxford that happens to be the highest spot in the county, something that could hardly qualify as a mountain. But it gets us Flatlanders excited to think we have one of those. So the radio show was named for it. In the introductory song that opens each Thacker Mountain radio show, the house band sings that this is the kind of experience that could just make you want to get on your mule and go straight to town. Point is, this is not just entertainment, although it is that too. It is about folks coming together at the heart and the hearth of their community. I don't think Thacker Mountain Radio could happen in just every community. I think it happens in Oxford because it captures and lives out even that spirit of real community that folks sense is there. For all the qualities that Oxford possesses, I think this palpable sense of community is its finest attribute. I think it's what draws folks like me to want to live there. Thacker Mountain Radio is just a tangible experience of that community. We all need community, I believe. We need the sense of identity and belonging and something really real that a community of live people is all about. College towns and healthy congregations have great potential to be the kinds of communities that we need. College towns and churches can celebrate the life of the mind and glean from that life the values that can transform. And of course, I'm suggesting that for congregations in college towns, the opportunities for being in the transformation business are multiplied. And I'm saying that the opportunities for transformation during a transition time, a time like the one this congregation enters this year, are once-in-a-while possibilities. And I'm suggesting to you that you open yourselves to these possibilities and opportunities and see what they might do to enrich your already wonderful community. I'm suggesting that you make the most you can of this rare time, and I'm wishing you all the blessings of the universe as you go. Godspeed.
Go forth into the world in peace. Be of good courage. Hold fast that which is good. Render to no one evil for evil. Strengthen the faint-hearted. Support the weak. Help the afflicted. Love all beings. Serve the Most High, rejoicing in the power of the Spirit. Alleluia. Amen. Blessed be.